Coming to you from top secret field offices worldwide, these brave men and women fight a battle for truth, justice, and good clean data. These agents of change make up the Bureau of Records, Objects, and Standards. They are the Data Bros.
Welcome to the Data Bros, your weekly 30-minute appointment with us, the Data Bros, to talk the comic book industry, comic book data, and what goes into running a modern comic store. I'm your Brian, and with me is your Django, and we're missing your Jeff.
Django, how are you doing?
I'm missing my Jeff. You just, like, why are you asking me? I'm missing my Jeff.
Okay? We're missing our Jeff. It's our collective Jeff. I know he's mostly yours.
I'm missing
yours.
Our Jeff.
He's our Jeff.
Are you happy? I'm missing our Jeff.
Our Jeff should be here. He really should be in Chicago with us, Chicagoing.
So we're in Chicago. I got here a couple days early.
We're here live in Meet Space together, which is a rare occasion.
The first of the Data Bros. Data Bros?
Data,
the first of this
Data
podcast. podcast? It's the first one of these that we've done live in the same Meet Space room. I got here a couple days early, and I went out to dinner with Don from Goblin Market, and the first thing that Don said to me was, "No figs?" about Jeff. I was like, "No, Jeff couldn't make it, but I'm here. Let's hang out and have fun."
No figs. Oh, Jeff. You know who else is missing Jeff right now?
Who?
Murphy's Apple Juice.
Oh, hello, Murphy's. We're so close to them here.
When I got across the border on Thursday morning at 7 a.m., beeline right for 7-Eleven, grabbed a Murphy's and hit the road. With a big jug of Murphy's, and I was just downing it on the... Oh, it was good times.
Yeah, I'm a little upset that you didn't save me some because Chicago has a no-fly zone for Murphy's.
Yeah, I don't understand what that is. It's probably got to do with cows and kicking gas cans and...
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm out here in Murphy's land, and in the only place that you're not allowed to get Murphy's. It's like a Murphy...
Murphy's free zone.
Dry Murphy's area. It's a dry Murphy's county.
Listen, this week we are in Chicago for C2E2, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about what we saw at C2E2. There is a retailers panel, which we got to check out tonight, mm-hmm. and then there was a lunar mixer after the show.
Yep.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about what we saw on the show floor. Some exciting things. You had a heck of a day. Got to meet some pretty cool people.
I got to meet some pretty cool people. I got to try to figure out how to navigate a con floor in a Starro mask. I'm glad you're wearing a brightly colored shirt.
That was pretty entertaining.
I got Klaus Janson to draw me a picture of the Shadow. That was awesome. And I also got the creator of Arsenic Lullaby to draw me a picture of the Shadow. I started a Shadow book.
Yeah, yeah.
And Shadow Book. Is that a real thing already?
The poor bugger follows Klaus Janson as number two. And dude, he did a spectacular job.
Yeah. Yeah. Douglas, Arsenic Lullaby has been one of my favorite weirdo things that I feel like I maybe shouldn't own.
Right.
For years and years and years. And he's friends with the guy who created my very favorite thing that I definitely shouldn't own, called the Plow. You can Google it, you won't find it. He was super intimidated by following Klaus Janson, and don't tell Klaus, but I might like this one even more.
Yeah.
Great drawing.
Yeah, it was spectacular. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Super fun to watch it come together too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he even started out on a separate piece of paper, did like a quick thumbnail, yep, and then he went into your sketchbook and blue lined it all and then inked it. And his inking process was so fun to watch.
So we were talking about this a little bit on the con floor, not to like jump around into, you know, data brofication and
there's no rules tonight. There's no rules.
Oh, thank God.
We're two beers in, three.
I don't know what you're talking
couple
about.
Couple beers in.
Who's counting? You got a spreadsheet for that?
I do, actually.
What are you, the two beers in police?
I do, yeah.
So we were talking about kind of the difference in price for creator drawings, right? Like sketches from creators. And you got an amazing deal on Starman.
Oh, yeah, years ago, like 2003, I paid $60 for a full body sketch, like with full alcohol markers, and it's grayscale and it's gorgeous. And it was on a 11 by 17 sheet of paper by Tony Harris. Cost me $60 Canadian in 2003.
And I think it's hard to find a $60.
Yeah.
Full body shot at this point, right?
Yeah. Like, oh, you will
like
not.
100, 125, 200, 400, yeah. 500, $600.
Yeah, like remarks. So just like a quick head sketch will set you back like $60.
Yeah. I think Janssen's were $125 for just a remark.
Yeah.
So I think that there's like two things going on there, right? We've got like an amount of inflation happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have this, I mean, it's not a new part of the comics industry, but I think that it's a growing part of the comics industry.
For sure.
And, you know, obviously one of the main sort of limiters or throttles you have for something that has too much demand is to increase the price.
Yeah.
And so I think like both of those things are happening right now. I don't know. I don't think we're saying anything that people don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I just thought it was interesting when you told me what yours cost. And I thought back to like when I could have had Sam Keith draw me a picture of the Max in 1992 for $10.
Yeah.
Right. Like I didn't have $10.
Yeah.
Because I was a little kid at the first comic convention I'd ever been to. But, you know, I think that the cost of that is probably like original sketches from comic creators. I think that that's probably outpacing most other cost increases in the comic book industry.
One of the first conventions I ever went to in Toronto had Norm Breyfogle, Dale Cowan.
Yes.
No, Dale Cowan. Dale, the guy that did the Hulk.
Kewan. Yeah.
Kewan, okay. Sorry. One other person, but I ended up buying a Joker versus Batman sketch off of Norm Breyfogle that was literally done on like printer paper. Mm-hmm. Just like he just banged it out and he just had a bunch of sketches in front of him. And it was like so, like, it was just a commodity. And people would go up and say, how much is this one? And he would say, $20. So I got that Batman Joker sketch. It was $20. And that was in like 91 or 92.
Right. That's about the same time I was seeing Sam Keith.
Yeah.
Dirt cheap drawings of this character that people would kill for now.
And there would be three artists at a convention. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like.
Mine was him, Ron Lim, and the guy who was drawing the Punisher at the time.
Okay.
And the guy who was drawing the Punisher was really good at drawing guns.
Yeah.
Like, he might have even had like a printed out sheet of all the guns that he would draw the Punisher shooting for you or something like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember there used to be there was like a technical manual of all the Punishers. It was like the Punisher Armory.
Oh yeah,
it was a comic.
It was like a six issue limited series.
Yeah.
This guy probably drew it. Whoever knows who drew that, yeah. I met him in Denver in like 1991.
That's amazing. C2E2, the artist alley was 26 aisles because it was letters A through Z.
Yep.
And it was Z. And it was also double because there was like an artist alley and then an alley and then a second artist alley. So it was double long. Yeah, it was so long.
There were some great artists there.
Spectacular. And they were peppered in amongst like kind of the regular vendor-y artist alley denizens.
Yeah, like kawaii stickers.
Yeah.
And sexy drawings of vampires and stuff.
And I walked by Jill Thompson like 8 times.
Yeah.
Because she was across from the Aw Yeah Comics booth. Yeah. And I went to the Aw Yeah Comics booth like 4 times.
Yep.
And went up and down that same aisle probably 8 times. Never saw her.
Yeah.
And then Mark from Aw Yeah showed us, I know where she is.
I was really hoping to get Chip Zdarsky to draw me a picture of the Shadow. And so I went to find him a couple of times. He had a huge line.
Yeah.
And one of the times I went looking for Chip Zdarsky and ran into Chip Mosier from Distillery instead.
That's a different Chip.
Yeah, I figured that out. He wouldn't draw anything for me. He was just like I know him.
He was just oddly charming instead.
He looked at me funny and said something charming and walked away. I was like, all right. So I'll keep looking for that other Chip.
Are you noticing, is he developing a Canadian accent since he's moved up to Canada?
Oh, have you noticed? Up there. No, but he is He's just more polite every time I see him. So.
When he starts saying sorry a lot, then you'll know.
Yeah.
Sorry, 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 sorry. So what did you think of the show floor overall?
Well, looking at it through the lens of a Starro mask was a little difficult. It mostly looked
don't
like
do that,
your
folks.
Collar, your yeah. brightly colored collar, so I could navigate the show floor. But when I had that off, it's a huge convention.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know if we're going to go tomorrow, which is Saturday, but it was comfortable the whole time there.
Yeah. Today.
Like there were some cramped spaces, but that was just because the aisles were narrow. It wasn't because there were too many people.
Mm-hmm.
When I've been to other conventions like Emerald City or New York Comic Con or San Diego, like there are too many people
there. Yeah, for sure.
That will probably happen tomorrow, I would guess. Yeah, I think tomorrow's so, yeah. sold out for this convention.
Okay.
I think the Artist Alley is great. I didn't find a lot of other vendors that appealed to me, but before we started recording, you were telling me that we had that there were a whole bunch of comic vendors that I just didn't see.
Yeah, I think you missed a bunch because there was long boxes, there was CGCs, there was an art vendor who has just a ton of original art. I was going through the Titans art and the Legion of Superheroes art and didn't find it. Although there were two binders of Animal Man art. Various
Steve
Animal
Pugh
Man.
Or...
So there was no Steve Pugh. That's what I was looking for.
That's what I would buy.
But there was, like the Last Days of Animal Man. There was a bunch
oh,
of that.
That was a fun
art.
Series.
Yeah. And there was, yeah, there was a couple other dudes in some of the books, but yeah, it wasn't what I was looking for because I'd love some Steve Pugh or Chaz Truong, is that his name? The other guy?
I don't know. I will tell you that. So I told Klaus Janson this. He was one of the very first comic creators whose names I knew.
Yeah.
Like you start reading comics and you're like, oh, cool, this is a comic. And then at some point you're like,
Marshall Rogers.
Oh, there's
cool.
a writer and there's an artist.
Right,
oh,
yeah.
And this artist is also doing this thing. And Klaus Janson, because of The Dark Knight Returns, which I read way too young and before I really collected comics. And then later on from Legends of the Dark Knight, when he did the second run
cool.
on Legends of the Dark Knight with Grant Morrison, that was like when it clicked for me that there was a dude behind the drawings in there.
Oh, that's,
and then,
that's cool.
Like one of the first times I was like, I had that realization that this comic I'd been reading for a while had awesome art. Because, you know, like sometimes they're so good at it that they're just sort of telling the story.
Yeah.
And then you end up realizing, oh, wow, this is actually really good. It's not just telling the story.
Yeah.
Animal Man. By Steve Pugh.
That's cool.
I was like, holy cow, this guy is drawing the heck out of this comic.
Coyote Gospel is still one of my favorite single issues of comics of all time.
Is that Steve?
Was
I feel
it?
Like that was before Steve Pugh started drawing.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, that's Chaz Truong or whatever his last name. T-R-U.
Yeah. Steve Pugh was doing it after Grant Morrison.
Right. Yeah, I remember that stuff. Yeah. That's cool. I think my first guy was probably John Byrne. He was the first person that I recognized was doing.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was X-Men because I remember there was like a.
Say Next Men?
X-Men.
Next Men by Dark Horse?
No, Uncanny X-Men.
Oh, X-Men.
Yeah. And I remember there was like a fill-in issue where that's what triggered it for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, this isn't as good as. Yeah. Oh, there are people. With names. Oh, neat.
When Gil Kane took over three issues of Legends of the Dark Knight, they advertised it really hard beforehand.
Yeah.
Amazing, the legendary Gil Kane. And I got the first issue. Like, what the? This is not good art. Like, I was so mad because we were like coming off the tail of all these like super hot early 90s artists.
Yeah, like, and Jackson,
like now I can look at it like, oh, yeah, this is rad.
Doesn't it start with Jackson Geiss? Wasn't that the first, like, the Shaman arc was...
No, I don't remember who did the Shaman arc, but it wasn't... I don't think it was somebody who you would have pulled out of your brain just now. But then it went to Klaus Janson for the next five issues. And then it went to Paul Galassi for the next five issues. And then I think the next ones were Garcia Lopez on Venom.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Yeah, why don't you Google that? I'll just sit here and...
Oh, I don't even...
And vamp? Is that what we do?
That's right. I don't even know if I can say that. Oh, no, it's Ed Hannigan?
Yeah, Ed Hannigan. That...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else Ed Hannigan has really done.
No? Huh, interesting.
So, yeah, I had a good time on the show floor. I would probably go back for a few more hours and look at the comics and stuff.
Yeah, if I was describing it size-wise, it is bigger than Fan Expo Canada in the South Hall, but not bigger than the combined South and North Halls. But I think it's probably half the size of New York Comic Con. Like going into it, I thought it was as big, but New York Comic Con was like a con, and then there seemed to be an entire other con.
Yeah.
And the publisher presence, like the Viz booth at New York Comic Con was massive, with those big, huge, like, remember that big, huge One Piece thing that there was in the one booth?
And
there was a lot more publisher presence. I didn't see a lot of publisher presence at C2E2.
The arrangement at C2E2 is kind of interesting because you walk in and the Funko booth is right there front and center, which is like, it creates a weird bottleneck.
Yeah.
And also there are some pretty high profile media guests right there at the front.
And then the publishers, like Brandon Sanderson was huge.
Yeah.
And he had that like house that was on
like
the floor.
A wooden house built in with glass windows and stuff.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the first time I've seen like book publishers with such a presence at a Comic-Con.
Yeah, well,
I can't remember a time that there was that much.
I feel like books and comics are kind of on their way into being one homunculus.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and you hear that from like independent bookstores that are heavy into comics now, and a lot of comic stores have essentially become independent bookstores.
Yeah, we were talking to River at Goblin Market, and she was saying like how inspired she was after going to a bookseller conference. And like just the thought process that they're having about how do we deal with our product mix and what's the most important thing to sell, and them looking at the way that book publishers and distributors give their stores support is totally different than the way that comics do.
Yeah. What is tomorrow? It's Independent Bookstore Day. Is that right?
Yeah. Saturday. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Goblin Market has a big event there. We're going to go to a party at their place tomorrow.
Yeah.
Seems like a fun day to be a bookseller.
So last week was Record Store Day.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend is Independent Bookstore Day. Next weekend is Free Comic Book Day. Interesting, the 1-2-3 punch.
Yeah.
And I feel like Board Game Day was recently too, wasn't it?
I don't know. There's like Board Game Day and RPG Day, and they're... That might have been recently. I don't track those super close.
So, show floor. Do you see anything cool on the show floor that you can think of?
Nah.
Yeah, it was all just stuff.
Great Plastic Man costume.
Yeah, there was a couple.
Fun.
Oh, that Iron Man costume that was out there. That guy was so pro looking.
Yeah, I'll bet his feet hurt today.
Oh god. Yeah.
That was a lot of weight.
For sure. So after. We kind of wandered around C2E2. That at 5 o'clock there was a retailer panel called "The Future of Comics?" Question mark. Was that right?
Yeah, I don't know if the question mark was official or not. Somebody might have added it.
Yeah, yeah. It was Patrick and Dal from Challengers, Katie Pride from Books with Pictures,
and Demetrios from Everyone's Comics.
Everyone Comics.
Oh, okay.
Two shops.
You got two shops. And that's some the six fingers in the one hand kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it was interesting listening to them. And what I found kind of interesting is that all three shops... Well, okay, so let's take Katie out of this. But Challengers and Everyone...
And Anyone.
and anyone are kind of similar in that they're kind of that like comic shop experience that relies heavily on trades and graphic novels and stuff. But I don't think either one of them really has a back issue presence outside of like the last year's worth of stuff.
Yeah, I think they both focus on new comics and trade paperbacks. And so does Katie. Like,
yeah,
her store doesn't have as many new comics, but she's got a like a very well presented wall
of
new issues, and then an amazing curated selection and super well merchandised section of graphic novels. But those are like definitely four stores that don't focus on back issues.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like the future of comic stores and what are they going to look like, and you know, what are the strengths that comic stores need to pursue. I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't have somebody up there who sold back issues.
Because
for our store, that's an avenue that we're definitely pursuing a little bit harder.
Sure.
And I brought up some stats while they were talking, and our sales for back issues are 9 to 10% of our sales for the last 6 months and the 6 months before.
Right.
Both of those segments of time are all like 9 to 10% of our sales.
And that's dollar value. This is what you're talking about.
That's dollar value.
Yeah.
And it's our fourth largest category.
Yeah.
So we do board games and books, comics, board games, back issues. And on any given week, back issues will overtake the board games. But you know, over time, it's in that order.
Now, if you were to rank them in terms of profitability, how would they rank?
It would probably put back issues at number three, maybe number two, but I doubt it.
Right.
That's far enough down the slide. But also, like, depending on the back issue that you're selling, it can be 95% profit.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably going to be a $4 comic.
Sure.
That you had to price 40 of.
Right.
And
right.
merchandise 40 of them and add 40 of them to your website in order to sell one of them. So, like, that's a really hard equation to answer. But I would say that they would solidly beat their nearest percentage, which would be board games. Like they would be near the single issue periodicals.
So there's four stores that were up there, and I think they all kind of have a similar focus on new readers and getting new people into the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
They're all like everyone and anyone is literally they're trying to show that anybody can like comics. Everybody likes comics.
Yeah, they all seem to be pretty like forward-thinking, progressive, sort of literally if comics are for everyone.
Yeah.
Like that's a mantra that I think the future of comics is.
I think, you know, so we won't go too deep into this, but the other thing I liked was that all three of the kind of big new point of sale systems were represented up there.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Comic Hub for everyone and anyone, Managed Comics for challengers, and then Comic Shop Assistant with Katie. So it was cool to see that. And I think they all mentioned, well, I know Patrick mentioned that like online selling is a key kind of feature for going forward.
Yeah, but not something that they're super pushing right now.
And they really don't. Like, what was it? They emphasize the in-store experience. So like they don't make their books available for sale until Thursday because they want Wednesday Warriors to get the kind of first crack at everything.
Yeah. And that, like, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
But then I start thinking about it and I'm like, well, but are you losing sales? And then I start thinking about it more and I'm like, well, but would you lose long-term sales if you made Wednesdays worse for your in-store regulars?
Like, right. Yeah.
I think one of the trickiest things about comic stores is that the profit margins are so low that it's hard to take a big chance on something. And, you know, if you have a big online store presence, you're basically running two stores with two very different markets.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So tricky.
Yeah.
So tricky to do that.
Although as Patrick brought up my whole bricks and clicks thing. I'm a Saturday warrior, mm-hmm. but the nice thing about my shop is that I can go online on Wednesday and say, I want to pick this up on Saturday, but I'll pay for it right now. Right. So stuff is available, and then I don't have it shipped. I just pick it up with the rest of my order.
I mean, that's the thing about comic stores, right? Is we all find a problem,
yeah.
and we all solve it in a totally different way.
Yeah, for sure.
According to the paradigm that's defined by 9,000 other problems that we've solved in yeah. totally different ways. Like we are, every store is this weird gumbo of superstitions and problem solving that ruins the next problem that you have to solve or fixes the next problem that you have to solve.
And every store might solve that problem three different ways, depending on who's working that day.
That's also true. That's also true. It's standardization. Nah.
Yeah. I always joke, I have 180 stores and they use the system 287 different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. and we've seen that too. Like today, I had to take a time out to do a little bit of code for the point of sale system yep. for a new user who likes to pull their subscriptions by alphabetically. Makes sense to me.
Yep.
By first name doesn't make any sense to me at all. We didn't have that in there.
Listen, there might be four Bryans.
No, it like as soon as they asked for it, I was like, oh yeah, that totally.
Yeah.
Like, of course somebody needs that.
Yep.
I just never even considered that that would be a way that you would do things. I'm sure that if you trace that back, you could figure out exactly the moment that they decided
yeah.
we're alphabetizing by first name.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
probably like, I don't know, it's somebody with a hyphenated name or it's, you know, just the way some dude decided to do it 25
well, just,
years ago.
Just thinking about it in my head, I know my store alphabetizes, like the store that I shop at, alphabetizes last name, first name. But think about it in my head. They don't know me as Garside. They know me as Brian. Like, it really does make a lot of sense to sort it by Brian Garside.
So, customers of the Comics Place, please skip ahead 20 seconds.
Bloop, 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 bloop.
One of my tricks when I can't remember somebody's name is to pretend that I can only not remember their last name.
Okay.
So, I'll be like, remind me your last name. And they tell me their last name. And that'll usually trigger something in my brain. I'll remember their first name.
Right.
But, not knowing somebody's last name is a lot more socially acceptable than not knowing their first name.
Or what if you just screw their name up entirely and call them Mary Jane instead of Molly Jane? What if you did that?
Yeah, yeah,
what if you did that?
What
if you're that dummy that sent an email to her earlier this morning and said, "Hey, Mary Jane"? I mean,
listen, I don't like to blame victims, Brian, but Mary Jane is a pretty common name in comic books.
Freedom. MJ, yeah, yeah. That's funny. Yeah, and the other one that always amazes me, and I know at the one store I used to work at, some shops just know everybody by a number. So you're 1125, and you'll yeah. always be 1125.
And if that's not, like, the perfect time to ask people to get chipped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that they just have to wave their wrist over something and
I'm gonna,
their number.
I'm going to get you a UPC barcode.
Yeah, a tattoo. Even a temporary tattoo.
There you go. Barcode. That'd be all right, yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. Then I don't have to remember your pesky name.
Yeah.
I'll just use your barcode, 1125. Are you the good Brian or the bad Brian? I never remember. There's so many Brians.
A Brian doing a point of sale. Oh wait, no, there's two Brians doing point of sale.
How many Brians are they doing? So it was an interesting panel. I think it would have been interesting to have some people with, like you said, back issue, maybe a toy, like somebody more toy centric would have been cool.
Games,
you
know, yeah. Like it. I know Katie doesn't do much with games at all, and I think Challengers is like.
I don't think they have a board game in that store, do they?
Well, they've got some Pokemon and Magic right now, but
yeah.
It feels like they're kind of slowing down on that a little bit.
Yeah. You went to Challengers for your first time.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Before you got to town, I went. Yeah. I took the L, Batman, the Gotham City L.
Okay. Yeah.
And went to Challengers and. This is going to sound mean, but I don't mean it to be mean.
Okay.
It's a very red store.
Very red. Yeah.
And it looked like So if I just said that out of context, it would sound shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, mean. If I just said that out of context, it would sound mean. But I really liked the consistency of it.
Yeah, it's
and
cool.
The color just kind of anchors you wherever you are in the store.
And from the street, you know that you're at Challengers because they've got the very cool Chris Iopoulos. All that, like the heroes all there, little running towards the thing.
Okay. Here's a thing that stood out to me when I was there. I was there for a couple hours. And during those hours, they had to change the blinds or the door situation 3 or 4 times.
Oh, interesting. Because of the sun?
Yeah. So they've got huge picture windows along the side. And when I got in, it was cold outside and pretty warm inside, and the door was open.
Right.
And some of the blinds were open. And as we were hanging out, they just like casually would leave behind the counter and close these blinds and open those blinds and close the door, open the door. Like it was this dance that they had with the sun. And
I wonder if they even realized they do it. That's interesting.
It was so casual.
Yeah.
And it was something that we don't have to worry about in our store at all.
Right.
Right? Like the closest we come to that is some days we have to open or close the door when it gets super hot or super cold.
Right.
So that made me think of just like, it's just another great example of how different every store is.
For sure, yeah.
And how anything that you're doing in your store can't be relied on to be the same in any other store.
Yeah.
These guys have a schedule for opening and closing the blinds.
Look at Goblin Market with their 2 different entry points, like opposite of the building.
They've got a front door and a back door.
Yeah.
And I've been in one other comic store like that, I think. And thinking about the way that would work in our store seems like a nightmare. It just seems and I didn't listen to the sound design in Goblin Market. I don't know if they have dingers on the doors.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything.
Like, if I had a situation where I had 2 doors, and I think from the middle of the store, you can see both of them
fine.
So, like, from their counter, you can see both entry or exit points, but not from everywhere in the store.
For sure.
And I would need a different sound that happened in the front door and the back door.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
And
like a ding and a beep?
Yeah, or like you just scrape all the oil off of one of them, so it's like a ding and a scrape, you know, like whatever it is. We don't oil the doors in our shop,
right?
Because I want to hear that one squeak and I want to hear that one scrape.
Interesting.
Yeah, it helps us just always know who's coming in and who's coming out at any given moment.
Right. Cool. Let's table our lunar discussion for next week, and maybe next week you and I can talk a little bit about some of the 12 or 14 stores that we're going to visit over the next 28 hours.
We got this.
We'll do it. So for this week, in the interest of keeping this a tight, tight 30, we're going to sign off for this week.
This might be a tight 31. I haven't been timing it, but just my gut says tight 31.
Could be pretty close.
I know. Close. That's why I said it, Brian. Pretty close. That's why I said it. Pretty close. Once you edit out the swear words, tight 31.
So, that's going to do it for this week. I am Brian. You can give me a Managed Comics on all the social medias. You are?
I'm Django. You can get me on Jeff's Venmo and Comic Shop Assistant and the Comics Place in Bellingham, Washington. Just Google. Like, you don't need my link tree. You don't need my @ handles. Like, my name
and comics.
The projects I have.
Your name and comics. I'm sure. I'll bet you.
Comics, dude. Like, Django Boren.
Yeah, yeah. That's
there's
true.
One
that's
of
true.
Them.
Yeah.
There's one of us.
There's 18 Brian Garcias. I'm just the first one that you'll find.
Yeah. And if you search Brian Comics, like, you need Brian Garcias.
The Data Bros is a joint project from the teams behind Comic Shop Assistant and Managed Comics. Data Bros are Django Boren, Jeff Figley, and Brian Garside. Brian Garside produces and edits the episode. And you'll find more about the Data Bros online at databrosinc.com. Subscribe, like, and review the Data Bros on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Brian Garza. Oh,
geez, comics, Brian comics, you'll probably find one of the bad Brians, I'd imagine.
That there's dozens of them.
There's dozens so of many them. Bad Brians out and there. And given that
you might be one of them.
I was just going to say, know. Given the day, you never know. I could be the bad Brian. It could be. We will see you next week on another Data Bros. Data Bros?
It's Data Bros.
Data Bros.
I don't remember Jeff's Venmo.
Isn't it Jeff Figley at...
Blame Hoffman or blame underscore Hoffman.
No, wasn't that
Reddit handle? Just look at old episodes. You guys can find it. It's fine. Jeff, we miss you. We wish you were here.
Yes, Jeff. You need to come to Chicago. It's so much fun.
Where's Figs?
Where's the Figs?